I'm like a proud papa, you know. I got my kids now, you know, that I just had a son, and then my Bayern son, Leon Goretzka, is just growing up before our eyes. Just really happy.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern podcast. Recovering from a disappointing 2-1 loss to Eintracht Frankfurt last weekend, Bayern Munich were back to winning ways in the Champions League earlier this week, beating SS Lazio 4-1 in Rome before smashing FC Köln 5-1 in the Bundesliga earlier today. With most players returning to full fitness and youngster Jamal Musiala getting better and better as the weeks go by, it seems the Bavarians might finally be breaking out of their rut. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all of that with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hey, everybody.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Well, following up from our last podcast, Bayern Munich really weren't in the best form, coming right off a 3-3 draw with Arminia Bielefeld. And it didn't really seem like things were going to be getting any better when they suffered a 2-1 loss to Eintracht Frankfurt last weekend. But they head into the Champions League this week and really kind of turned that around with an impressive 4-1 win against Lazio, and then built off of that today with a big win against Cologne. And there's really a lot for us to talk about that's taken place over the last week or so. But let's start with that Champions League game, that big win at Lazio. Because in the chat, Sebastian, during the game, you kept saying that you really didn't see this coming. You were really kind of surprised by the result, by the way that Bayern were playing, even. Because it definitely wasn't a fluke of a win. Bayern were very much the dominant team, especially in the first half. So why was that such a surprise for you? Why weren't you expecting that out of them?
Yeah, it was so surprising for me. I think mostly because there had been problems before that, and we didn't really solve that problems. Those problems, we also got additional problems, kind of, but we were perfectly fine anyway, kind of. And this was very, very surprising to me. Like, suddenly Niklas Süle plays pretty well as a right back. Didn't see that coming. Then another one would be like Kingsley Coman was, kind of the worst player on the field, maybe something like that. Also pretty surprising to me. And yeah, this is just kind of just the start. The defense overall was pretty good. Davy is probably the worst in the back line. So, yeah, it was kind of a bit like Bizarro World, what we saw there. It was all kind of, not what we were used to be seeing, really. So I also don't quite know what to make of that now, because it's not like the problems we had are exactly fixed. It's like they disappeared for a match. Maybe now we can say some of those problems disappeared for like 2 matches. But yeah, who knows? I'm not perfectly confident here that these are not going to come back, really, because I'm still not convinced that Alaba, Boateng, Süle are perfect for their positions right now. I'm also not really convinced that all these other things are suddenly fine. Like, I'm not perfectly convinced that Sané is on the level we need him consistently, even if he was on the level we want to see him at in this game. So yeah, it's weird. It's really a bit weird, because yeah, of course I'm happy how that match went, and it was a really good performance against a strong opponent. But yeah, it doesn't feel like we solved the issues we had, and I think we are still kind of we haven't really made a step forward. Really, it's just like we had this lucky, well, not lucky. It was probably unfair, but we had this fortunate thing happen. And now we're still in the same place we were before, just with one more win. That's how I feel about this anyway.
Interesting. Garrett, I'm going to come to you in a second, but Sebastian, you brought up a lot of points that are good to talk about. One, I guess I do want to go ahead and address is Niklas Süle, who you mentioned had a better game at right back, especially against Lazio, but then also again against Cologne. There were times against Lazio where it almost looked like we had a gigantic version of Lionel Messi playing over at right back, with some of the footwork that the big man broke out that We had seen glimpses of before, but not to the extent that we saw out of Nicholas Sulla. So, Garrett, maybe you can speak to Hansi Flick's decision to play Nicholas Sulla at right back. Are you a little bit more, I guess, optimistic about our short-term future with him playing at the position? And then how are you feeling about Bayern in general right now? Do you think that maybe these two games were more of a fluke, or do you think we're heading in the right direction?
I think to answer that second question, we're definitely headed in the right direction. I think guys are getting healthy, which I think is huge. We were talking about it, and we're getting pretty close to a first choice 11 with this squad finally being healthy. And that seems like I can't remember the last match where that happened. But as far as Sulla goes at right back, I think I like him better than a lot of the other alternatives that we've seen. And I think that if you put the people around him right, it works out okay. And I'd have to go back and look at it, but I think in the last two matches where he's looked a lot better, he's actually had Goretzka playing in the midfield position ahead of him on that right side. And it seems like, for whatever reason, I think probably because Goretzka doesn't kind of do the free-ranging thing that Kimmich tends to do at times, that kind of helps Sulla kind of be able to be a little bit more defensively sound. And also, he is a little bit more offensive-minded than maybe we even give him credit for. And to have a guy like Goretzka ahead of him that he can kind of lean on from a defensive standpoint, I think it has really helped him. But also, like, you know, I think he's got a lot of skills that can translate well in terms of a second, potentially third choice right back. I think you can clearly do a lot worse. I mean, we have Bonassar on the bench still, and we're still not playing him. And I wouldn't want to play him over Sulla by any means. That being said, I don't know once Pavard is healthy if you want to keep playing Sulla there. Just because, you know, we've talked about it, and I just think that given how solid Pavard was at right back last season, you got to expect that at some point he's going to turn around and be solid again. Maybe not even to the level he was last year, but at least you can count on him a little bit more. But I think Bayern in general, you know, have started to kind of find at least the offensive side of their game, which was lacking in several matches prior. And that's really at least an encouraging step forward, because this defense is just, it's going to do what they're going to do. We're not going to see, it seems like we can almost count on not having a clean sheet. Part of that is that they're risk takers, and that's okay. Part of it is that they seem to have a lot of uncharacteristic brain farts. I mean, like today, Alaba and Boateng kind of miscommunicating. It seemed more like Alaba just didn't want to go for that loose ball, but that ended up in the back of the net. But it's just that side of the game, I think, is still something Bayern has to figure out. But it's definitely encouraging against two pretty stout opponents. I mean, Lazio is a pretty decent defending team, and Bayern played real well against them. And Köln can definitely hunker down when they need to. And so it's encouraging. We're not there yet by any means, but there aren't a whole lot of teams that are that really concern me playing Bayern. I would guess that probably the most concerning team would be the one that we have up next. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah, Saturday against Dortmund, which I guess we'll talk about more toward the end of the podcast, is going to be maybe a better test than what we've seen so far. But while we're talking about the whole right back situation still, Sebastian, I'll kind of camp out here for a second. What do you make of the recent rumors? They are rumors, but from several people, including Fabrizio Romano, that Bayern Munich have kind of cooled their interest in Max Ahrens for the summer, probably a little bit turned off by the price tag that Norwich have placed on him, regardless of they get whether or not they get promoted or stay in the second division. Does that, you know, kind of worry you that that's another right back candidate that we're kind of crossing off the list when that's such a standout position where we need improvement?
Yeah, I think you're hinting at it a little bit there. What I find really concerning is that our list is very short and the list of people we already crossed off that list is pretty long. This is what I find really concerning, because we had this situation last summer and we also had it in winter, kind of. Are we getting another right back? Should we get one? And I think it was kind of weird that we didn't do more on this position in the first place. And yeah, well, nothing more happened. We got Bona Sarr, who we thought, okay, maybe they are really confident about this guy, but apparently nobody is. So, well, I really, really, really hope that we're really making sure to get someone we can trust a bit more, who we can regularly play there, to can at least have a 50% chance against Pavard to get that right back spot. And yeah, this is going to cost some money, maybe not quite the kind of money we seem to be talking about with Max Ahrens. But yeah, if it's not Ahrens, I would really be interested to know who the other candidates are. I mean, it's kind of fine by me if we don't hear that ahead of time when they if they do this in a quiet kind of fashion, because I think we have talked about that in the past, that we kind of like that when they are kind of being, well, relatively clear with what they're doing, but also relatively quiet with what they're doing. So like they're first doing this thing where nobody really has a clue, and then things get pretty serious pretty quickly, and we're pretty clear about it and get things fixed, like we saw with Upamecano. I would really like something like that, but I would really not mind having it happen a bit sooner, really, because. Yeah, how all this panned out in the end over the last summer, this just scares me. I'm just very afraid that we're going same thing again. We are not going to be able to get rid of Sarr, but we're also not going to play Sarr. So this is also going to be kind of dead money there, and it's going to be weeks and months, and nothing's going to happen. And we're all going to hope that. Finally, we're going to sign a right back. I'm really not ready to do this again. I'm not ready to do this again. And I really think there's no reason why we shouldn't act a bit quicker with this. I would really like to see a change there. But yeah, maybe I'm getting a bit cynical because of all this experience we have had with this position. But yeah, there can really be no doubt that we need a proper starter for right back. And I don't think we have that one. We have Pavard, who can play in some matches and it can work pretty well, but I think we need this other option, and we really, really need it. And if it's not Max Ahrens, we need someone else to do that. And that's just the bottom line.
I think from my standpoint, like I think I agree with you with Max Ahrens. I think if they're not willing to spend, you know, the $35 million or whatever it was, that to me seems reasonable for a guy that's not ultimately that proven of a commodity. I mean, he's considered an up-and-coming talent and all that. And you would think, on the one hand, that surely you could find some player cheaper that you could either develop, or you could, you know, kind of rotate with Pavard and feel good about. But like you said, Sebastian, we've been on this right back issue for a while now, and so at a certain point you have to say, well, it should be easier, but it's clearly not, and so you're gonna have to start investing in a a proven commodity, and that's probably going to cost you some money. That being said, you know, PAC on the other hand, it really hasn't been that much of an issue if you consider the fact that Bayern won the treble last year. They have a pretty good shot at a double this year, and are just kind of clicking right along. It's still one of the best clubs in the world, and so maybe there's just not as much urgency from the Bayern board perspective, because you know things are not as good as they can be, but they're still pretty good, and so they're probably even looking, they're probably looking more to the financial health of the club than we are. Now, that being said, I think that by all accounts, this club is very financially healthy, so they could probably stand to take a few risks. And I don't think that a guy like Bonasar was considered the right kind of risk. I think that there was a risk there in signing him, but the risk was that he'd be there was a lot of people that kind of expected him to be what he has been. So yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bother me too much that Max Aarons isn't maybe the guy for that price tag, but we do need to kind of figure out what is the answer then, because we've been doing this quite some time. And like you said, Sebastian, I don't feel particularly excited about going down that road again.
Yeah, I agree with both of you in that if it's not Aarons, that's totally fine. As long as there's something in the works, you know, maybe it's some other young guy that we have our eye on. You know, it could be a whole Alphonso Davies kind of situation where there's someone we're watching that could come out of nowhere. I maybe slightly disagree with Sebastian, and this is no surprise, in that I'm a little bit more optimistic about Pavard's capabilities when he is in form. But he is definitely not your traditional right back, and it would be nice to have someone a little bit more offensively capable. But let's go ahead and move on from that, because we do have a lot more to talk about. And let's start with Jamal Musiala, who has had quite the week. Not only did he just turn 18 this week, but before that, he became Bayern Munich's youngest ever Champions League goal scorer. He settled his international future by committing to Germany. And if reports are to be believed, he signed a big contract extension at Bayern Munich that hasn't been announced, or he's on the cusp of signing that contract extension at Bayern Munich. So by all accounts, a massive, massive week for the young guy. And Sebastian, let's go ahead and start by talking about his decision to commit his international future to Germany, because there's been a lot of speculation recently about what he would do, where he would commit, and he chose Germany. He said Yogi Love was able to convince him to do that. But to kind of put a Bayern twist on this, do you think him choosing Germany signifies his commitment to Bayern for the future over, you know, potentially a return to England or something like that?
Yeah, I think it probably does. I think if that is part of his reasoning, it definitely makes sense. Because both is he going to be more important to the club if he's playing for Germany, since Bayern is pretty much committed to have good German players on the squad, especially those who play in the national team. And also, Bayern Munich is probably by a lot the best place to get recognized, to get eyes on you by the important people from the national team. Löw, obviously, I think Löw played, as you hinted at, a very important role in convincing him. I read that Musiala was pretty impressed by his actual meeting with Yogi Löw, where they talked about his strengths and his weaknesses, and that sounded pretty good. So even, of course, we also have to consider Yogi Löw might not be there for a very long time, so he's definitely not going to last as long as Musiala's career in the national team, I would say. I think that's pretty pretty conservative assumption here. But yeah, even when Jogi Löw is not going to be there anymore, yeah, when you're playing at Bayern Munich, this is when where everybody's going to watch. This is where you can show what you can do. Because if you start for Bayern, there's a very good chance that you're also going to have a good shot playing in the national team. So that definitely just works out very well. It fits. And yeah, I'm very happy that it happened this way. I was pretty surprised, I must say. I did not see that coming, certainly not so quickly. Because before it kind of seemed like he might be choosing England. So I thought, okay, we'll probably get him a new contract at the club. But yeah, I was kind of giving up hope on him playing for Germany. And I'm very happy that this is happening. Because, yeah, Germany is just not as talented as it was. We just don't have as many impressive young players as I would like, even if the situation is not as bad as some Germans seem to think. But yeah, so definitely two very good steps, both for Germany, for Bayern, and for Jamal Musiala, I would think.
So when we talk about Jamal Musiala, Garrett, and we've talked about him a whole lot on this podcast, but some people may be wondering, maybe they haven't watched him enough, maybe they don't see what we see in him. What is it that makes him such a standout talent? What does he particularly excel in, do you think? Because when you look at him, he's obviously not a very physical guy. As you know, Leroy Sané nicknamed him earlier this week, he does kind of have that Bambi build. He's a bit skinny. He looks a bit, I guess, like a twig out there. Not that he's, you know, particularly short or anything when you compare him to someone like Thiago Dantas, who we realized is a very tiny individual earlier today. But what makes him such a standout player? Where maybe do you think he is best utilized?
For me, what I am most impressed with is probably primarily his poise. When he's got the ball at his feet, I think he seems so comfortable with the ball at his feet, and even when with defenders bearing down on him, he seems to still be able to control that ball so well. His build reminds me a lot of Thomas Müller, and that's what is most exciting for me is the fact that there is potential that he could play in that number 10 role in a way similar to how Thomas Müller does it. He can learn behind Thomas Müller while Thomas Müller is still, you know, such a important part of this Bayern club, and could potentially be that heir apparent to him, because, you know, we've talked about several times, you know, like it with Joshua Xerxes, like, could he be, you know, the replacement for Robert Lewandowski when eventually he moves on or retires, and how important it is that we need to be looking ahead in that regard. But even to me, even more important than what happens after Lewandowski is what happens after Müller. And we, because we saw in, against Frankfurt when they tried to plug in Choupo-Moting at the 10, that was just ugly as sin. And it was there was just such a gaping hole in the middle of the pitch. So Musiala has just, because he is so poised, he is so young, and he is so good with the ball at his feet. He's got a little bit of creativity. He gives me a lot of hope that he doesn't have to be the same player as Thomas Müller, and because I don't think that's possible. But I also think he's got a lot of the qualities that you're going to need if you're going to want to try to move on from Thomas Müller in a few years. And that's what's most exciting to me about him, more so than, you know, some of these other young talents that have kind of come up, is that Bayern, even though Müller's still got a few years left, if they can really feel like they've got Musiala nailed down and he's really developing and growing the way that he seems like he has been. I thought he was so good against Lazio. And to be as young as he is, it's a really important step for Bayern. And that's to me why Bayern fans should be really excited about him potentially signing an extension and being here for a while.
I think you're spot on in that it would be just massive if he could be the I don't like the word replacement, so I'm going to choose to say successor for Thomas Muller, and that sort of
that's a better word
right, that's sort of not really a number 10 but like a not really a shadow striker, just that Rom Deuter type of position. And I think you're right, there's a lot of similarities. However, maybe you could even say that there's some aspects of his game that he's a little bit more advanced than Thomas Muller even is. You know, not, I'm not suggesting at all that he's a better player already anyway, but I think I've made this comparison before. I see a lot of Thomas Muller in him, but I also see a lot of a younger Mesut Ozil in him as well. He's got that vision. He's got that just capability, like you said, to hold on to the ball. He's so good with the ball at his feet. I think that's what has impressed me more than anything. Like you said, his poise, his composure, he is not scared to try to take on anyone on the dribble. And he's, you know, an excellent finisher, as he showed against Lazio. He can pick out a pass. He's really just an exceptional talent, an exceptional player. And if he develops, if he continues to develop the way that he has so far, he could definitely reach, you know, the Thomas Muller type of heights, the Mesut Ozil type of heights. And it definitely does seem like we have a special player on his hand. Sebastian, maybe you could talk a little bit about Jamal Musiala if you have something to add there as well. But maybe if not, you could point out maybe a couple of areas that you think that he could improve if he wants to reach the highest heights.
Yeah, I guess I want to mention, of course, it's obvious, as you said, he's just somewhat better with the ball than Thomas Müller even is. He's the better dribbler, kind of. He's better in a one-on-one, of course. But I think I would say that both of them kind of do deceptively simple things very well, and they do it in a way where it's very hard for other players to pick up on what they're actually doing until it's too late. Just Thomas Müller does it more with the open space, I think. His passes into open space, but also moving into open space, getting passes from other players, while Musiala is also doing stuff like this as a dribbler, kind of, which has a lot to do with his kind of body language, how he's looking on the pitch. And I think the effect is kind of similar, and yeah, it's different techniques, of course. It's kind of different skills, but there are also a lot of similarities there, I would say. And then, yeah, where can he improve? I think, of course, the first thing I would mention here is physicality, athleticism. He can definitely get a lot better by probably exercising with some weights and stuff like that. But this is just going to make him even better, of course. Like, I don't expect him to be our next Leon Goretzka in that department. He's never going to look like Süle looks or something. But yeah, this is just something that's going to happen anyway to an extent, because that's just what happens when you're 18, 19, 20, getting into your 20s. Yeah, it's just going to be relatively easy to put on some muscle, to put on some weight. This is definitely going to help. And yeah, I think this is the first thing here and of course, other than that, there's just a lot to be said for experience, which he obviously doesn't have yet. He's also just going to profit from that. The good thing is that he's a very talented, very young player, but he's and an offensive player, but he doesn't rely much on his speed, because this is something that sometimes just doesn't develop in such a fortunate way. Sometimes you have a young player who's very, very fast, and then he gets injured twice or three times or four times or something like that. And then, yeah, well, the quickness, the speed, the agility is just gone to an extent. And I don't think that's such a big deal for him as it would not be for Thomas Müller. So that's definitely good news here. So the kind of player he has a good chance to improve without losing a lot over the next couple of years, I would say.
I liked what you said in the chat the other day, that when Leroy Sané called him, you know, Bambi, I was like, man, I'd kind of be offended at that. But you reminded me that at the end, Bambi indeed does grow up to be this great stag. So maybe that is where Jamal Musiala needs to improve. But at the same time, you know, we're making comparisons to guys like Thomas Muller. I said Mesut Ozil. You could probably throw in Kai Havertz, you know, in another type of similar player in there. We're not really talking about very big guys, like you said, Sebastian. We're not needing him to become a Leon Goretzka. Mostly just kind of filling out his body, you know, getting that little bit of extra balance, extra weight. I think that it's going to come naturally, like you said. And man, hopefully we really do have another special player on our hands. Sebastian mentioned Leon Goretzka, which gives us a good segue. And Garrett, I'm glad you're on this time to talk about Leon Goretzka. But today he had a hat trick of assists against Cologne in what was easily a man of the match performance. He just dominated the midfield alongside Joshua Kimmich. And you talked about a stat, I'll let you bring it up here in a second, that just shows how impressive he has been since he's been back. So maybe talk about the importance of Leon Goretzka, especially now that we've also got Thomas Muller and Joshua Kimmich back in our midfield.
Yeah, I mean, the last 150 minutes he's played, you know, he's got four assists, and I think you brought up the stat that he's now yet another Bayern player with five assists in the Bundesliga this season. I had to sit here listening to the pod helplessly as the soft Goretzka slander was going on after, you know, he was out and Roca was playing well, and but I understood it. I understood what everybody enjoyed about watching Mark Roca play that couple games. He did really well, but I think just what Goretzka has brought and what he's shown, especially in these last two matches, what he's shown that he brings to this Bayern squad is even kind of what I mentioned at the beginning with his effect. What I think is his effect on playing on the same side as Nicolas Sulla is, he just kind of gives Bayern kind of a rock to kind of set the low level line. I mean, if you're gonna go with a rating, you know, a 1 to 10 rating at all his skills, he's probably in the 7 to 8 range on all of them. And so where he can excel at certain games, you know, he might bounce up into the 9 range, but he's always gonna be in that 7 to 8 range. On the offensive end, on the defensive end, just finding space, closing down passing lanes, all sorts of things. And I think that really gives Bayern kind of this level of calm. And I think what separates him in terms of why he's a good partner with Kimmich is that, you know, with a guy like Roca, who's probably a better defender than Goretzka, by a little bit, Goretzka's got that offensive element to him as well that, you know, that we're seeing right now that's really helping Bayern go forward, even as Kimmich is also an offensive midfielder. And so it's, I don't know, you know, I'm not knowledgeable enough to know all the technicalities of why this works. I just know that Goretzka is one of those players that's probably never going to break in and become this big superstar. And he's probably not going to be the first guy that you think of when you think of, you know, excellent offensive players or even excellent defensive players. But he's just so good at everything on the pitch that, you know, even though he's not the best at everything or any one given thing on the pitch. And I just think that that's kind of one of those things that with Kimmich especially just really makes this Bayern team work. Now, if we could figure out a back line to put behind him, I think that Bayern would be in really good shape. But like we really did see once, I mean, at the beginning of the run when they started, you know, Bayern started really putting things together, it was when they stuck Kimmich and Goretzka together. And I still think that when that's happened, Bayern quickly had the best midfield in the world at the time. With those two and Thiago at times, you know, filtering in there and Muller ahead of them, they just all work so well together. And with everything great that Muller does ahead of them, everything great that Kimmich does, they need that guy who can kind of match them in very varying ways without overshadowing them or trying to do too much. And I think he's just been a perfect fit in that Bayern midfield. So I'm really excited. obviously that he's, you know, I think it was back in beginning of January, we were talking about how well he had been playing with Kimmich out. And now I get to, you know, wax poetic about him again, because, you know, he was gone, Bayern struggled, and now he's back, and Bayern seem like they're starting to get things going again. And so just everybody just needs to remember this the next time it starts to look like maybe we don't need Goretzka there. Maybe we can put someone else there. No. Always play Goretzka. He's Goretzka, Kimmich, Müller, Neuer, Lewandowski, everybody else you can interchange.
I think you bring up a lot of good points, and it is a good reminder. I mean, ever since Joshua Kimmich moved back to midfield and he's been playing with Leon Goretzka, we've talked about how it really seems like the two of them have a special partnership, and probably a lot of that has to do with how they get along with each other off the pitch as well as on the pitch. And so you're right, maybe we did need that reminder from him today that he's still a lot better of a player than maybe we give him credit for. And, you know, you kind of said he's probably not ever going to be recognized as like a superstar. He's probably not going to be ever going to be like a household name type of player. He's not naturally going to get the recognition someone like Joshua Kimmich probably will. But on the same hand, I do think that a lot of people would recognize that he's probably one of the best, if not the very best, just box-to-box midfielders in all of Europe. And I definitely think he's earned that reputation over the last year or so. But while we're talking about Bayern Munich's midfield, it's really not been all good news for the past week and a half. Corentin Tolisso, yet again, suffered another serious injury. He's likely out for at least the rest of the season. We could even be looking at beyond that as well. So, Sebastian, it's kind of a tough topic to talk about because, you know, you don't want to be insensitive when you're talking about a player, you know, suffering injuries. But, man, do you think we've seen the last of Corentin Tolisso in a Bayern jersey already? Do you think the injury actually may have an inverse effect where he won't be sold this summer, whereas he probably would have before? What's gonna be the impact of yet again another long-term injury for Tolisso?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we just have to talk about it a bit. I know, of course, I can only imagine that for the player himself, this is devastating, of course. But yeah, there's no sugarcoating it. We need to talk about it. We cannot act like nothing happened. So, yeah, I think overall, this probably makes it less likely we're getting rid of him in the summer, I think. Because, for one thing, there's not going to be any chance for him, or it's not likely that there's going to be any chance for him to show off what he can do anymore, and, well, impress potential buyers. And also, yeah, it's never great to, yeah, buy a player who, well, has been injured for months and months. Nobody is going to be like excited about this prospect. So this is definitely a bit of a problem, because I think it would have been the best solution for everyone if Tolisso would have had some more chances over the rest of the season, so everybody can see where we're at. Like he can see, okay, am I better than Roca? Would that role be enough for me? Being the guy after or behind Kimmich and Goretzka, maybe. And for the club, for us as fans, for everyone who's rooting for Bayern, it would have also been very interesting to see what he can do compared to players like Roca. Nothing like that is going to happen now, of course. I don't think it's going to be worth it for Bayern to get rid of him, therefore. Because, yeah... Why would you sell him? Because you want to get some money before he leaves a year later for free. But yeah, if there are not going to be many buyers, like, what are you going to do, right? Mm-hmm. So not many options there, really, because I cannot believe that there are going to be any interesting offers for him in this situation. It would be very lucky if, for example, Lyon or a team like that would decide, okay, we might want to have him back for a kind of a fair price. But yeah, I mean, he has been injured, and it's not his first long injury. He has been injury prone. So I would say not only is this a problem now, but when injuries pile up like that, this is just going to be lower your value completely. Not just for now, but yeah, his overall value is just going down. Because yeah, he's struggling to stay healthy. This is not great for anyone. So yeah, I really don't think there's going to be many good opportunities to get any reasonable money for him. So I feel like we're probably keeping him because this is the easier solution than it's not worth selling him for 5 million. This is nonsense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is a very sad thing, but yeah, I think that's what it is.
I'm guessing that probably, I don't know, I guess the best case scenario for Bayern, if you're trying to recoup a little bit of money, would be that by the time he gets back healthy, you could loan him out or something before he leaves for free. Or, I guess best case scenario is he comes back and, you mm-hmm. know, somehow is better, you know, he figures it out. I don't know, but it is unfortunate for him, especially because I feel like he had shown some flashes at times. I ever since that first big injury, I guess it's been a real struggle for me to see him as a player that is going to break into the starting 11 and be there consistently. So I remember when we first started talking about this and just chatting about it, it was like, I kept thinking, well, Kingsley Coman was, you know, had injury issues and look at him now, but Kingsley Coman is also a bit younger than Tolisso. And I didn't realize that. So yeah, it's unfortunate. Hopefully he can get healthy quick and maybe work himself into a role, whether it's with Bayern or somebody else that, you know, he can still be a real productive player. I think he's a good player. I think he'll be a good player, possibly even a really good player for another club. But I don't know that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for him at Bayern, especially after another big injury.
Yeah, I do think above all, we definitely wish him the best. Wish him a full, speedy recovery, and that he can, you know, get back on track, like you said, Garrett. Whether that is at Bayern or at another club. It'd be a real shame to see, you know, another career that had so much promise at the beginning just kind of pan out and turn to nothing because of unfortunate injuries. And, you know, there is always the chance that he pulls a Kingsley Coman and he finally gets it together and it finally starts to click. So I definitely do wish him the best going forward. One more thing before we wrap this episode up. Next weekend is, you know, what has traditionally in the Bundesliga been the big match, Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. I do say traditionally, Sebastian, because this one kind of doesn't really have the appeal to me that a lot of what's been labeled Der Klassikers have had in the past. It really doesn't seem like we're really going up against our biggest league rivals, probably because we actually aren't in this Borussia Dortmund side. So are you still, you know, seeing this as a huge match for Bayern? It's obviously still a very important match for Bayern. But do you, you know, kind of see where I'm coming from with this not necessarily having the appeal it would have had in years past?
Yeah, definitely see where you're coming from there. Dortmund has just not been very impressive. They haven't looked like the top contender, and they haven't been. So, yeah, it looks much more like Leipzig is the bigger threat this year. And if Dortmund isn't paying attention, maybe not only this year, but maybe for the next couple of years, I feel. It's going to be tough for Dortmund because if they're not great this season, next season there are going to be some changes, I'm pretty sure. They're probably losing Sancho, probably using Haaland, and then, well, this is a completely new story, and this is just going to get harder. They're going to have a new coach. I guess I'm surprised that they, I was actually expecting them to make changes earlier. I mean, now, of course, the new coach who's coming in summer, they cannot get him earlier. So this is kind of off the table. But before that was decided, I was kind of surprised at how much time they were giving Terzic, because, yeah, this hadn't been looking good. This weekend, they have been playing well, it seems. I wasn't able to see any of that today, but yeah, looks like things are looking up for them. So at least that much they have going for them. Yeah, I think as the situation is right now, I think this is a game Bayern has to win, and not a game that's nearly 50-50 as it has been in recent years at times. This feels much more like 70-30, 80-20, something like that, or even worse from a Dortmund perspective. So if Bayern hadn't been looking less than perfect over the last couple of weeks themselves, I would be very confident and say this is not a huge threat. I mean, you always have to be on your guard, of course. But yeah, other than that, I would have said, yeah, this is a game Bayern is going to win probably. So now, kind of not as much anymore, even after today's match. But yeah, it's just not as glamorous. It's not this top game. It's not, well, the most important match in German football. It doesn't feel like it right now.
Yeah, I was thinking that they were playing better. They look like they're starting to hit on a few cylinders more than they had for a little bit there. But then looking at their schedule and who they've played now, granted, Bayern drew with
BSL. I was going to say it, yeah.
But even so. Dortmund just beat them 3-0 and before that beat Schalke, who I'm not sure that they even want to play any games anymore, Schalke, unfortunately. And they beat them 4-0 and then they kind of struggled a little bit with Sevilla, I think. A little bit, not a ton. They got three quick goals in the first half and kind of made that a little bit less of a match. But then even before that, then they drew at Hoffenheim. They lost to Freiburg. So I don't know. This is not the Dortmund that we've expected to, like we've been saying, that we've been expecting to contend. I don't think that they're going to be going away as a top, you know, five or six club in the foreseeable future, just because I think that they can sell guys and then reinvest that pretty easily. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting match, especially with Bayern seemingly picking up steam. Mm-hmm. Dortmund plays Gladbach in the Pokal on the 2nd of March. And so they'll have another game in between, and that's another chance to pick up some injuries or to re-show themselves as not really contenders, or maybe they'll pick it up. I don't know. But I wasn't circling this match by any means. When I took a look at the schedule at the beginning of the 2021 calendar year, I just not really worried about them, because it's not. I really do think that you're right, that Leipzig is definitely the one that we're mm-hmm. much more concerned about at this point.
Well, and also in recent years, the better games have come against RB Leipzig.
Yeah.
I'm really, really counting on Bayern Munich to get a win here. And, you know, based off the way they've played against Dortmund in the Bundesliga for the past several seasons, I'm expecting it as well. And I do think, it could be a big game in the sense that, Garrett, you said Bayern are picking up steam. You know, beating Lazio 4-1, beating Cologne 5-1. If we can, you know, round it up with a pretty big win against Borussia Dortmund, I do think we could see Bayern Munich really just getting right back on track. And so I think it could be a big game in that sense. We've got a full healthy 11 going into it right now. So yeah, I'm really counting on Bayern to get the job done, and hopefully that'll really just straighten us out, get us back on track for the rest of the season. That is all the time that we have for this episode. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you're a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there are a few ways you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter @superbayernpod and get in touch with us, keep up to date with us there. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.